So thank you guys for bearing with me through the first session. We're going to now get into the hopeful part of it, but it's a lot of work. We're going to talk about short-term strategies in this next section, because most of you here, if you have struggled with this, you know it's a problem, and you don't need me to tell you how much of a problem it is. Your question is, how do I get out? I'm going to give you three basic strategies to get out of this. The first two we're going to talk about in this session before lunch, and the last one we're going to really expand on in the last session after lunch at 1:30, Lord willing. So let's talk about this session, short-term battle strategies. And these are the things that you can apply today to really start fighting this. If you have not gotten serious about getting this sin out of your life, these are the things that you need to do. We are going to start where Jesus started and cutting off sources. Turn with me back to Matthew chapter 5, and we're going to read the rest of this verse. And I want you to listen to what Jesus said, because there are lots of different ways that you can approach this sin, but you must be willing to do what Jesus says in Matthew chapter 5. You must be willing to go all the way with this. So listen to this and let the words of Jesus sink down into your hearts, because Jesus is not just talking about any old sin right here. He's talking about the sin of lust, and that is the sin that we're talking about. Matthew chapter 5, beginning in verse 27. You have heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lustful intent has already committed adultery with her in his heart. Then Jesus gives the solution to this sin. If your right eye causes you to sin, keep it around a little bit, and like, right eyes are really useful, and you know, you don't want to be too extreme on this. And what, is that what Jesus said? If your right eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away. For it is better that you lose one of your members than that your whole body be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. For it is better that you lose one of your members than that your whole body go into hell. Jesus uses some of the strongest language in the Sermon on the Mount about this sin of lust. And he wants you to think about where this road leads if you do not fight this sin. If you are not willing to do whatever it takes to be right with God, then he will tell you, you're going to end up in hell. And you think about that. If you were in hell, you would not have been in hell for one instant before you think, I would give up anything. I would give up anything to keep from coming to this place. I think about the parable of the rich man and Lazarus, where he says, please, I want to warn my brothers. I want to tell them. I don't want them to come here. And again, it seems so extreme to me in that moment, but I don't want to be here. That's the motivation that Jesus is using. And it's hard to think about that. It's terrifying to think about that. But that's what Jesus said. You cut off your hand, you pluck out your eye, and you throw it away so that you don't end up going to hell. Let me just say, on a positive motivation of that, that when we die or the Lord comes back, you will not have been in glory for an instant before you realize it was so worth it. I would have given up more if it was necessary. It doesn't matter what the cost is in this life because of what is coming after this. I consider the sufferings of this present time to not be worthy to be compared with the glory that's to be revealed in us. Guys, it's so worth it. It's not even fair to say it's worth it. Like, it's more than worth it. Like Paul says, it's not worthy to be compared. And the strategies that I'm about to tell you are going to be hard. And you're going to want to make excuses. And you're going to want to say, but I don't really have to. And if you have that mentality, good luck. You must be willing to do what Jesus said. And once you get that in your head and you decide, I'm doing this and it will be worth it, then there is hope. And there can be growth, and there can be forgiveness. You have to cut off your hand and pluck out your eye. So, practically speaking, here's what you need to do. If you're struggling with pornography, you need to make a list of all the access that you have to get pornographic material. And what you unfortunately have to do with this, if you've been in this for a while and you're kind of addicted to it, I use that word to not talk about like clinical addiction, like there's a separate thing, but if you realize like you're looking at this compulsively, like you don't want to, and you find yourself keep going back to it, you need to get creative. Because what happens when somebody's addicted to something and you take away what they have? They start to try to find ways around it, and they start to get creative. And this is true for me. It's like, okay, well, I'm going to cut it off here and here, but there's still a way I can sneak through the back door and get to... No, like, you have to think about all the access that you have. Now, of course, you can't cut off all the access in the world. You can't destroy the internet or go burn out and down all the adult bookstores or whatever. Don't do that. But you can control a lot of the access you have, and you need to be committed and say, I'm going to make a list of here's all the ways I could do it. And if I lose these ways, here's the ways I could still get to it. And then what you need to do is cut off your ability to sin with each one of those things. Now, there's a lot of ways that you can do that. We're going to talk about passwords, filters, accountability. Obviously, with passwords, and there are some friends of mine who've done this with me, is they'll have like their iPad or whatever, and maybe it's like a work iPad, but they'll put passwords on certain apps or on certain functions of the device, whatever it is. And of course, you don't have the password. Somebody else has the password. And so you can still use the device, but you use it when you're being supervised, or you use it in a time where you know you're not being tempted. You don't have it sitting on your bedside table at night unprotected. That's asking for trouble. And so you go to that person and say, hey, I need to use my iPad for a little bit. You know, here's what I'm going to do. And they hand it to you. You put in the passcode, and then you can use it, and you've got some accountability. You've got some people there to help you with that. There are filters available. Covenant Eyes is one. There's several others. That Covenant Eyes is the one that I've worked the most with people. And let me just say this. There's no perfect filter out there, but filtering is particularly helpful to keep you from accidentally going somewhere. And if you're just scrolling and you don't want to see something, and especially if you're family and you don't want your kids to accidentally do something, filtering is just so needed. Don't give your kid unfiltered internet access. But you need to decide, if you're going to these sites and you want an extra step between you and the sin, you put as many obstacles in the way as you possibly can to get you to wake up. Again, like David, when he started and then there were these opportunities he had to repent, you set up as many opportunities and wake-up calls as you possibly can, so that you realize, wait, what am I doing? Like, I don't want to go down this road. I'm going to stop right now. And filters are one of those things. When it blocks a sight and you realize, oh, wow, there I was, starting to go down this road. And it helps you turn around and not try to find a way through the back door. Another way is accountability software. And that's where the software will monitor all of your online activity. Sometimes that means you have to delete all your other browsers and just use the one browser that's being monitored. But these technology keeps on getting faster, and these services are catching up with it. But what accountability software does is it monitors all of your online activity, and it sends a report once a week or once a day or however often you want to somebody that you choose. And it doesn't have all the explicit stuff in it. It'll just have like the URLs, and it will flag different ones depending on if it's on their list of bad stuff. And maybe it's not on their list, but they're like, hey, we don't know what this is. You should check in with the person about the site. And what's helpful with that is you get on your device and you know that everywhere you go, somebody's going to see it. What we ultimately need is to remember that God sees us. He sees our thoughts, he sees our hearts, he sees all of us. But there's something extra powerful about somebody with skin on and you knowing that they're going to see where you've been. And that's a huge deterrent to say, I'm not going to go there because I don't want so-and-so to know about it. And again, that's helpful in the short term. You ultimately want to get to a place where you want to do it because you love the Lord and you're not going to do what's wrong. But if you're stuck in this, if you're addicted to it, accountability software can be a real help to, again, putting an obstacle between you and acting out on these impulses. What you need to do, if you can't handle it, you need to cut it off. And I'm going to say some things here that I believe are absolutely reasonable for you to do. If you cannot handle having a smartphone, get rid of your smartphone. I have friends who have dumb phones. They have flip phones because they want to be holy. And I thank God for that. If you can't handle an internet connection wherever you are. Now, I realize some of you are like on campus and you can't shut down the whole internet or whatever. But like, if you can't handle internet access and you have control over that, you don't need the internet. You can go to the public library with the public computers that everybody walks by, and you can go check your email. You can go do your homework or whatever it is that you need to do. But you do not need the internet. You do need to be holy. Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 14, pursue peace and the holiness without which no one will see the Lord. You have got to be willing to take drastic, radical measures in this if you really want to be holy. And this is true for all sorts of sin, but it's especially true for this sin. And again, I mean, people just make all sorts of excuses. My smartphone, man, like, this is my life. Like, everybody, what am I going to do without my smartphone? You're going to be holy without your smartphone. You're going to serve Jesus Christ without your smartphone. Life goes on without our technology, guys. And we don't need it as much as we think we do. What examples did Jesus use? Your right hand and your right eye. You want to talk about something useful, you can do a lot of good things with that. But he says, you want to get rid of this? If your right eye causes you to stumble, pluck it out and throw it away. Some of you guys have probably seen the movie Fireproof, and like one of my favorite scenes in that movie, no more parasites, right? He's got the baseball bat and the computer, and that's what you got to do. Until you're willing to do that, I don't know if you're going to experience lasting growth in this. You've got to be willing to listen to Jesus and to do what he said. And let me just say, it may be that you start out with some of the lighter things. You start out with some filtering. You start out with some accountability. But if you're constantly finding ways around it, if you're constantly still figuring out ways to get to bad stuff, cut it off. Follow what Jesus said. Lots more we could say about that, but we're going to move on to this next section here. This is probably the biggest thing that has helped me in my battle with pornography, is accountability. And we're going to talk about exactly what this means and get into some details here that I hope will be helpful. But the answer to this is ultimately relationship with God and with other people. And I thank God for the people who have worked with me on this, for the people that I called at 1 o'clock in the morning weeping because I'd fallen again, and they stayed up with me and they prayed with me and they helped me when I needed it most. And I thank God for the people who dealt with my constant text messages and say, hey, I'm being tempted, would you pray for me? And the people who checked up on me and said, hey, how are you doing? And had those awkward conversations that are like, you just want to talk about the game, man, or whatever, but like, you got to say, hey, how are you doing? I mean, like, how are you doing? Let's talk about it. This has been the thing that's been the game changer for me. And different things help people to different extent, but you need somebody else. Do not fight this battle alone, because you're not alone. Thank God. And if this series today doesn't accomplish anything else, what I hope the one thing to get through to you guys is, if you're struggling with this and you have not talked with anybody about it, and it's been a struggle that's been private for you, if you will just talk to somebody and start to get help this weekend, this whole thing will have been a success. And if you have been struggling, but you really need to get serious about it, and you go and you reach out to somebody and say, I need accountability, I need help, if we can just make some of those connections this weekend, I will consider this to have been a success. So be willing to do this. So let's talk about this accountability thing. James chapter 5, verse 16. We've got to realize that this is the way that God wants us to be healed. This is not something that's just kind of like, well, that would be kind of nice, or maybe it's kind of optional. It's like, we need each other. James chapter 5, and talking about prayer at the end of the book, he says in verse 16, therefore confess your sins to one another and pray for one another that you may be healed. The prayer of a righteous person has great power as it is working. One of the most powerful things about getting accountable to people in this verse is that you open up to somebody else, but then what are you doing for each other? It's not just spilling your guts, but then you are praying about it. You're taking it to God together. And that's where you find the power of healing, is when you get together and you confess your sins to somebody else and you pray with them about it. Look back at Proverbs 28 and verse 13. This is ancient wisdom. Proverbs 28 and verse 13. Whoever conceals his transgressions will not prosper, but he who confesses and forsakes them will obtain mercy. And let me just tell you, for the time in my life that I concealed my transgression and I didn't talk with anybody about it, or maybe like I talked to somebody one time about it and then like didn't talk with them anymore, I continued to struggle. I didn't prosper. It was not until I got open consistently about my sin that I really experienced lasting change about it. Satan does his best work in the dark. And you've got to be willing to get this sin out into the light and get some other eyes and some other minds and, of course, be bringing it to God in prayer. That's when you can really start to see it for what it is and figure out battle strategies in the long term to be able to really get this out of your life. But notice also in the second half of the verse, he who confesses and what? And forsakes them will find mercy. I've been part of some confession times at different camps and different times, and I've seen sometimes some confession sessions go kind of like this, where, like, you know, a group of guys gets together and, like, you're going to talk about it, and everyone's kind of like, oh, you know, well, it's been this many days, you know, or it happened this many times this week. And then the next guy goes and he's like, yeah, it's been, like, you know, a few more for me, you know, for this week. And the other guy is like, well, I had a better week this week, you know, it was only once, you know, or whatever. And you kind of go around and, like, that's kind of it. It's like you just kind of tell with each other, but everybody's struggling and it's just confessing. You're not talking about what you're going to do to actually change. He who confesses and forsakes them will find mercy. You need to open up to people who can actually help you with this. What did Jesus say about the blind leading the blind? They're all going to fall in a pit. They might talk about how bad the pit is, and they might mope around in the bottom of the pit and say, yeah, this pit's pretty bad, isn't it? Yep, sure is. But you're not getting out of the pit. So it's not just accountability with other people who are struggling, but you need to find some people who can help you. Find someone who is strong. And let me say this. Guys need to help guys, and girls need to help girls. Do not make exceptions to that rule. I have seen people get into worse trouble with their boyfriend, their girlfriend, because they're like, oh, I got to have that hard conversation. I got to open up. And then you start talking with them about this stuff, and maybe you even find out that the other person's struggling, and like, all right, we're going to help each other. We're going to be accountable. And like, do not do that. Do not go down that road. Guys help guys. Girls help girls. You might have a conversation at one point saying, hey, I'm struggling with this. Would you pray for me? I'm getting help from some of my guy friends on this. And same with the girls. And again, this is why we need godly women who will step up and who will be resources of help to other women on this, because it's not just a guy's problem. It is a girl's problem as well. And what's happened, I feel like, in my lifetime is I'm so grateful, because I grew up in, like, in middle school and high school. I thought like I was the only Christian doing this. Like, I felt like garbage. And it wasn't until I opened up and realized, like, whoa, like, most of the guys I'm talking to are also struggling with this. And I really believe that, at least from my limited perspective, the church has gotten better in my lifetime about being open about this. And again, I commend you guys for having a session like this that takes guts to talk about this. But it's kind of more out on the table for guys to struggle with this. It's still not as much on the table for girls to struggle with this. And it can, you can feel so trapped and so isolated and so alone. And that is one of Satan's best tools to keep you in despair, is to make you think you're the only one and nobody struggles like I do and I can't get help with this. And that is a lie. You can find help, but you've got to be willing to reach out. So find a fellow man or a fellow woman who is strong, who's doing well. Again, Luke 6:39, the blind lead the blind, they both fall into the pit. Then, here's the thing. Effective accountability is involved early rather than late. Again, the thing I just described to you with, like, the confession session, the other problem with that is that they're all talking about stuff that's already happened. What you need to do is to get and fight a different battle. When you start to be tempted, that is the time to get accountable, not after you've already fallen. Now, let me say, if you've already fallen, it's important to reach out immediately and to confess to somebody and say, and to commit to somebody. Say, if I fall in this, I will tell you within, you know, the same day. Like, I'm going to tell you when I fall. Because then, again, that's another obstacle of saying, if I do this, I promise, like, I'm going to have to tell somebody. Do that. But really effective accountability is involved before you sin. Imagine that. This is so important. And again, this was something that for a long time, like, I was confessing, but I was just doing after the fact confessing. I wasn't confessing my temptation and getting help and prayers before I sinned. And this was what really helped me turn the corner. It was 2011 when I started. And I said, okay, I've got this friend who I went to FC with, and I'm going to text him every time I'm tempted. And you might say, well, Stephen, if I do that, I'm going to blow up my friend's inbox. Yeah, you are, probably. And it's going to be worth it. It's absolutely going to be worth it. And you need a friend who's doing well and who is also willing to get those text messages. And let me just say, thank God for people like that. Maybe you can be somebody for somebody else. If you're doing well with this, use that and reach out to people, because they need somebody like that. And what that does, here's what's so cool about that, is when you reach out early and you reach out consistently, it breaks the fog that Satan casts over us. Because when we're being tempted, we are really good at coming up with excuses and rationalizations, aren't we? Like, we can think, oh, look, it's not that bad, or it's not really pornography. It's just this little, I'm just going to get on Facebook, or I'm just going to look at, and like, we just come up with all sorts of ridiculous excuses to like, just this once or whatever. But when you reach out and you text somebody, hey, I'm being tempted right now, it breaks that. And here's the beautiful thing. They don't even have to be available in that moment to text back and say, hey, I'm praying for you, brother. I'm praying for you, sister. Like, what can I do for you? You want me to call? But just the fact of you having to type it out and send it, you have broken the fog and say, hey, I realize I'm being tempted right now. And now I can do something about it. And like, that was the big thing for me, is because I would like rationalize and move closer to the temptation, and then I'd fall and I'd be like, well, how did I end up over here? It's because like when I was being tempted, I didn't do anything about it. I was like, oh, I can handle this. I don't want to be discouragement, all that. Let me just say on this excuses thing, man, we can come up with so many reasons not to reach out to somebody. One of the ones that I hear with the guys that I work with so much is, well, I didn't want to be a discouragement to you. You know, if I reached out and I said that I was being tempted, or I said I'd fallen again, you know, I just knew that was going to be such a discouragement. I don't want to be a discouragement. Oh, doesn't that sound noble? You want to be a discouragement to me? Don't tell me. You want to be a discouragement to me? Don't reach out and sin again. That's how you can be a discouragement to me. And so I tell guys, when I first, if they reach out to me and I say like, all right, we're going to work together on this, I say, I'm going to take away some of your excuses right now. Don't think to yourself, well, I'm going to discourage him if I reach out too much, or I'm going to annoy him. You want to annoy me? Don't reach out. Again, like, that's what I want people to do, because that's what helped me so much, is when I reached out and received that help. And so get rid of that excuse just right out of the gate. Sometimes I've heard this excuse before. Well, I should be able to handle it. If I just lean too much on other people, then like I'll never build up my own strength and I won't be able to really move forward. What does the biblical wisdom say? Confess your sins to one another. He who conceals his transgressions will not prosper. You're not supposed to do this alone. You need other people to help you. And especially if you're just in the early stages of getting out of this, you need some crutches before you can walk again. Like, you need to lean on your brethren and be able to get that help. And again, to this day, like, there are people that I'm open with and I talk to about these kinds of things. And so you need to reach out to other people. Don't use that as an excuse. You know, if I don't learn to handle it alone, I'll never get stronger. That's ridiculous. If you want to get stronger, you reach out to people and you get help with this. And we could probably go on and say, what are the excuses that you struggle with? Because, like, we all make excuses on this. So what you need to do, just on a practical level, when you are tempted, you need to pray and you need to text or whatever you do at the first sign of temptation. Commit to doing that. And it takes some practice to get into that. That helps break that fog of war. In the text message, you don't have to be explicit, but state the temptation and state the battle plan. So you say, hey, I'm being tempted, you know, I'm at school and there's a girl I want to look at and I like, I do not do this. Or hey, you know, I'm home alone, my parents just left the house and like I'm being tempted because there's a computer here. Or you know, whatever it is, state what it is that you're being tempted by. And then say what you're going to do about it in the text message. Say, all right, I'm going to get out of the house. I'm going to go do 10 push-ups. I'm going to go for a walk. I'm going to, you know, pray. I'm going to go read Matthew 5, whatever. You know, just stating something really simple like that can give you a then plan of action. Because so many times we just sit there and we let Satan have his way with us. And we're being tempted and we know it, but we don't do anything about it. So if you text the person, again, even if they're unavailable, you now have broken the fog of war and you have a battle plan that you're going to accomplish right now. You know, I think about Joseph with this. You know, if he had a text message or a cell phone, you know, Potiphar's wife again, running. that would have been his text message. And so that's what we need to do. Reach out and have a battle plan in place. I use this word hesitantly because it's kind of a buzzword right now, but you need to figure out your triggers. You need to figure out what is causing you to sin. Sometimes you might put it this way. Don't let Satan fool you the same way twice. Okay? Don't let Satan fool you the same way twice. If you go back, and one of the things I do, if somebody reaches out to me and say, hey, I've fallen again, I'll say, okay, how was your day before that? What happened before that? Don't just tell me what happened. Tell me how you got there. Because many times, you'll start to see a pattern develop. You'll start to see, oh, it's always in the morning. It's always in the evening. It's in the shower. It's when I'm in this particular place. It's when I'm around this person. And you start to narrow down. This is how you start to really experience growth, is you start to cut off your ability to sin in these different situations and say, if I know it's going to be in the morning, first thing when I get up, like that's when I want. Or lo and behold, it's 2 a.m. and I'm alone with the computer. Wonder what temptation I'm going to face. It's like, get yourself out of those situations and realize the path that leads up to your sin. Trace the sin back and realize where it starts and reach out back here. Don't reach out after you've already fallen. Well, do reach out after you've already fallen, but especially beforehand. So go through and figure out if it's a time of day, morning or evening, it's a location. If it's a mental state, for me, one of the big things was just like, I was just stressed and I was tired. And that was like a trigger for me. It's like, I just want to feel good. I want some stress relief. And this is my go-to thing. And so you've got to realize that is when I'm stressed, when I'm tired, I might not even be tempted in that moment, but I know that that's like a trigger for me. And so when I'm stressed and tired, I'm going to go ahead and reach out. And I'm going to provide some healthy alternatives for that stress relief. I'm going to go for a run. Running has been great for me. I love to run. Some of you guys know that. And sometimes that's what I need to do. It's like, okay, I just need to go for a run right now. And that's really helpful to redirect that energy to something pure and productive. So figure that out. But again, cut off your ability to sin in those different situations. There are guys who text me, you know, they're saying, hey, I'm going to be in the shower. If I don't text you back in 10 minutes, call me, you know, like what's going on. And there's ways that we can be accountable to each other and, again, break that fog of war to know what we need to do. So identify triggers, identify when you're vulnerable. And let me also say this. This was something that I did not do for a long time for people that I worked with. The person struggling should initiate the accountability. What do I mean by that? There's a big difference between somebody who's strong saying to somebody who's weak and saying, hey, how's it going? Hey, how's it going? Hey, how's it going? And et cetera. And the person struggling saying to the person they were reaching out to, hey, here's how I'm doing. Here's how I'm doing. Here's how I'm doing. What's so different between those two things? When the person struggling is having to initiate, it's on them. Now, there may be some times where it's like, hey, I haven't heard from you, man. Like, what's going on? But that is where you really grow stronger because it's your resolve that is initiating the communication, and you're growing in your resolve to say, I'm going to reach out when I'm tempted. And you're the only person who knows when you're being tempted, you know, unless the other person is like with you right then. And even then, a lot of this is like mental. It's inside. You can't see it happening. And so you're the only one who can reach out. And you know, you can't like fall and then say, well, you didn't text me. It's like, I didn't know you were struggling, you know? So you've got to be open. So the person struggling should be the one initiating those text messages or phone calls or whatever it is. You be the one to reach out and get help. And let me just say this. Maybe you've tried some of these things. If what you're doing is not working, change. Figure out what does work. This was, for me, was a big trial and error process over the years. And I realized, like, I'm doing this, but I'm not getting help. I'm not really seeing growth. And so figure out what works for you. Again, I've worked with different types of guys, and I've had to learn I can't help everybody the same way. There are times where, again, even on like the this person needs a kick in the pants, this person needs an arm on the shoulder kind of a thing. Like, people need different approaches like that. Sometimes people need different types of messages, different types of support and help. Some people benefit a whole lot more from the filters and the accountability software. Other people, it's all the account, like the face-to-face or over the phone accountability. So important to do that. Let me also say that it's really important. There's the constant stuff that's going on. But in addition to this, I think it's really helpful, a couple of things, and I tell people this. Maybe the first person that you reach out to that you feel comfortable talking to is like far away initially. Long distance accountability can be helpful, can be good. Find whoever you can. But I think it's really helpful to find somebody local. Find somebody that you go to church with, who you're going to see on a regular basis, face to face. And there's that regular reminder of, hey, this person knows what's going on in my life and they can help me with it. I can talk with them in person. It's not just over the phone, because of course, it's just so much easier to hide when it's in a long distance thing. So find somebody local, if at all possible. and get accountable to that person. That's really, really important. And it's also, I think, important, whether you're doing well or whether you're struggling, to talk at least once a week. Have some kind of regular meeting set up. One of the things I like to do, we're going to talk more about this in a minute, is I go through the book, Finally Free, with people. This is a really helpful resource by Heath Lambert. I think he's a Baptist, but there's not a lot of like theological stuff or a bunch of error in this book. It's about overcoming pornography. But what I'll do is we'll be doing like this like daily accountability, but we'll, once a week, even if things are going well, we'll just go through this book. And it's important to have that relationship not just be a, hey, I'm struggling relationship, but a, hey, like, let's positively talk about the scriptures together, and let's think about growing closer to God and fortifying ourselves against this sin. And this book is helpful if you're struggling. It's helpful if you're not struggling. A lot of the principles in this book are applicable to other types of sin in your life. It talks about humility and selfishness and all sorts of stuff that's a problem just all the time. So usually we'll do like a chapter of Finally Free once a week, and then like the daily texts and stuff like that. But those were the things that really helped me. I wish I'd known about this book earlier. I didn't find this book until just more recently. It's been a great resource. Okay. That is the material that I have for this session. We're ending a little bit early. But write down your questions. We'll pause for a few minutes and we'll discuss this some more if you have specific questions on this. But let me just say as we wrap up this session, these are two things that you can start today. You can get a software on your computer or whatever it is today, and you can reach out to somebody today. Please, please do that. Thank you, guys. Ask good questions. and again, I'll do my best with some of these, but these are really good. And thank you guys for being open in these. Of course, all these are anonymous. I feel like I don't have the right to pray because I've struggled with taboo sins like this. How do I feel comfortable praying? And thank you for asking that, because I know you're not alone in that. I've talked with people who feel that way too. One of the things that we have to understand is the grace of God. We're going to talk about that in our last session this afternoon, the balance of grace and really trusting that God actually forgives us. And that's something that, again, I'm so thankful for where I grew up, but there were times where I don't know if we emphasized the grace of God as much as we emphasized obedience. And both of those things are absolutely necessary. But you can overcorrect. The grace of God can be abused, but you've got to understand that God really wants to forgive you. And he wants you to pray to him. And if you pray to him with a humble and a contrite heart, like it talks about in Psalm 51, and Psalm 51 is a great example, isn't it? Here David has stumbled terribly in sexual sin and even in murder, and yet he's still able to pray to God and say, God, I have sinned against you and you only I have sinned. And let the bones that you've broken rejoice. You know, he comes back, restore to me the joy of your salvation. God wants us to pray to him about that. I don't know for you specifically, whoever this is, how you can feel comfortable praying. You may have to figure out why it is that you feel like there's a block there. But if you are repenting of your sin, which is the changing of your mind, I'm not going to do this again, even however many times you've done it in the past, then you can pray to God and ask him for forgiveness. What did Jesus say about us forgiving other people? If your brother sins against you 7 times in the same day, and says, I repent, what do? You forgive him. Why does God tell us to forgive other people like that? Because that's how God forgives us. 7 times in the same day. And I'll tell you, there have been times where I've had to pray for God, I don't know if it was 7 times, but however many, but multiple times in the same day about this. But God wants you to come to him. Remember how God has forgiven you in Jesus Christ. There's hope for you. Another question from this, how open should you be with the person you're accountable to? How specific can you be without crossing a line? May I refer you to Finally Free? There's a really good chapter in here on accountability. And let me see if I can find it real quick, because he talks specifically about that. Effective accountability should avoid explicit details. And he has a whole section here, but he says, you will balance these two truths by describing enough of your struggle that those helping you know how to keep you accountable, but not giving so much detail that it would fuel further temptation. Your accountability partner needs to know in broad terms, number one, how you access pornography. For the example, they need to know if you get on the internet or buy it from a store. Number two, they need to know approximately how much time you spend viewing pornography. And number three, if you're looking at styles of pornography that are different from what they might expect. For example, if it's homosexual pornography, child pornography, or something else, you know, violent. Those are the three things they need to know. You don't need to describe in detail what's going on. Let me just also say about this book is very careful to talk about this subject in a pure way, and not all resources are like that. I got Every Young Man's Battle when I was growing up, and I think that book hurt me more than it helped me. I know it's helped a lot of other people, there's some good things in there, but it describes some scenes in that book that were tempting to me, and I still remember like what was in that book, and like that was not helpful. This book is not like that. It avoids those explicit details and says you should avoid those explicit details too. Really good question. Thank you for asking that. Does your advice about men being accountable to men and women to women apply to professional counseling? That is a good question. I would say generally yes. That's what I would recommend. Is if you can find a counselor. Now, there may be situations where the only person you can find is someone of the other gender. Maybe, but I would really think that if you're a guy struggling with something deep enough where you need professional counseling, find a guy who can help you with this. I know you guys had David Pickup not too long ago, and he has some excellent counseling stuff in general. So for guys, he would be one I'd recommend, but for girls, you might find a female counselor. And then just when is professional counseling needed? That's another really important question. And again, there's not a one-size-fits-all answer to that question. But if you're doing all of this stuff and you're still struggling and it gets deep into your psychology and other stuff, we're going to make a reference to this in our last lesson, then you may need to realize I need some counseling to dig into maybe some of my past, figure out why maybe past trauma or something is causing me to try to fill this void in my life with the sinful material. There's not a perfect answer for that, but sometimes professional counseling can be helpful. Be very careful who you go to. Professional counseling is so tough because there's so many worldly, godless ideas in the counseling world. And you need to find somebody who, as best you can, someone who believes in God, who's not going to steer you away from scriptural principles in that professional counseling. What is the best way to help someone who opens up to you about this problem? As a friend? As a significant other? The thing that I recommend to people is just start to read through this book together. And say, hey, let's get together once a week, or let's talk on the phone or whatever, and let's just talk about this. And this book will help kind of guide you through some principles. And again, it's not a fix-all, it's not a magic bullet, but that's one thing I do with people. If you don't know where to start, that's a helpful place to start. And it talks about God's grace as the foundation and kind of walks you through different strategies to help. But the main thing you can do for somebody is just to be there for them. Check up on them, ask them how they're doing. But this gives you at least somewhere that you can set up something recurring where you can really learn more about their struggle and find out ways that you can help them. As a friend, that's what I would recommend. As a significant other, if somebody opens up to you and it's your significant other, you need to do your best to connect them to someone of their same gender who can help them and say, thank you so much for opening up to me about this. I will be praying for you, but I do not need to be the one to help you. And it may take some searching, but again, talk to some older adults, talk to some people. Hey, who would you recommend? There's somebody that I know, and I don't know if you can do it as anonymously as you can, but they want help with this, and I can't be the one to help them. So let's find somebody. Let's work together to find someone to help them. Great question. I know I want to try to help other girls with this, but I know that this is something girls don't talk about. How do I let others know that I'm willing to help or get others to open up to me about this if it's something they're struggling with? Man, I appreciate the heart behind this question so much. That's a tough answer. For me as a guy, again, guys tend to talk about it more than girls, but it's just times where if you have an opportunity to lead a devotional and you get to pick the topic, you might drop that in there somewhere and say, like, we all were working on sexual purity, and this is something that guys usually talk about, but girls need to talk about it too. And hey, if you want help with this, like, I'd be happy to talk with you about it. I don't know if you have those opportunities to speak publicly. And just in your conversations with people, as you're talking with people, maybe even just the subject comes up. You know, they say, oh, you know, my boyfriend is into this. And you're like, well, you know, girls struggle with it too. And, you know, I'd like to help with that or whatever. But finding ways to be open about that. I found that one of the best ways to encourage openness in others is to be open yourself and to say, hey, here's what I've struggled with. Here's where I've been. And, I say this not to build myself up, but I'm trying to help other people with this. That's a great question. Thank you for asking that. Although significant others should not be your accountability partner, what can they do to help? Also a good question, because I've been strong on the negative end of that. The biggest thing you can do is pray. Pray fervently. Pray frequently for them. The prayer of a righteous person has great power as it is working. It's the ESV of James 5:16. You can check up on them. You have to be really careful about that, because that initiates conversation that maybe shouldn't be happening. You don't need to be their accountability partner, and you don't need to be the police force for them. This is true, I think, in marriage as well. Your spouse needs to be your friend and your companion, not the cop in the relationship. It's much, much better, even in a marriage relationship, if you can reach out to somebody else. If you're in a dating relationship, again, you don't need to be talking on a regular basis about this, but praying for the person, and sometimes even talking to the person who's helping them. Get them connected with someone of the same gender and say, hey, you go to them for help. And there are times where you might ask them, hey, how is so-and-so doing? And then you can carefully, say, hey, they're doing well, they're reaching out to me or whatever. But that might be helpful. Those are the questions that I've got. Are there some more that have come in? Okay. Again, really good questions here. So I think this question says, counselor, a has-been or an innocent? I think that's the idea of, if you're reaching out to somebody, do you want to find somebody who's been there, done that, or do you want to find someone who's never struggled with it? I think there's advantages to having multiple counselors, and sometimes some on both sides. Obviously, you want to find somebody who is doing well. Either they have never done it, or they have gotten that out of their life already. That's really important. Don't let the blind lead the blind. But there is an added level of helpfulness if you can find someone who has struggled with it and has come out of it, because then they really know where you're at. This is something that drugs and alcohol wasn't something I struggled with. Sometimes people reach out to me about that kind of thing. I'm an innocent on that one, so to speak. I'm not an innocent person, but you can still help, even if the person has never struggled with it themselves. Again, if they can do some reading, this book, again, is helpful to go through with somebody. It's extra helpful if they've been there, done that, and have gotten out of it. But even if they haven't struggled, you can reach out to them as well. Recommendations for accountability software, browsers. That's going to be our last slide of the last session, but I'll go ahead and tell you the two main things that I've seen people work with. One is Covenant Eyes, which comes from Job 31:1. I have made a covenant with my eyes. How then can I gaze at a virgin? So this accountability software comes from that verse, covenanteyes.com. These are paid subscription. It may be, if you're still living at home and you don't have like a credit card, you may need to open up with your parents about this. That's something I encourage people to do if you're still at home. Your parents hopefully will be able to help you as well with this. I know that's a conversation that's really hard to have. I still remember where I was. I think I was in 9th grade when I walked down the stairs and just sat there how am I going to tell my parents? But I did, and I thank God that I did. They didn't really know how to help me at the time, but I'm really glad that I got help. So it may be that you need to do that. The subscriptions are usually something like $10 or $12 a month, but totally, totally worth it. Again, that's pocket change when you're dealing with something this important and this helpful. Covenant Eyes is one of them. The other one would be a service called Ever Accountable. And depending on if you're a Mac or an Android people, you'd want to check into what's available there. Ever Accountable doesn't do so much the filtering. It doesn't prevent you from going to bad sites, but it will monitor all your stuff. I think it's a little bit cheaper than Covenant Eyes. I think Covenant Eyes has an option where you can do the filtering or the accountability or both, and the price may vary on that. But you can go online and check those out. We'll talk more about that in the next session, Lord willing. And this is a very honest question, and I appreciate this. What if we are scared of what others will think of us? First of all, you're not alone. That's what we're all scared of, isn't it? I mean, nobody wants to go to somebody and say, hey, I need to talk with you. I've been looking at pornography. That's what's going to happen in that conversation? So it's not wrong to be scared about that, but I just want to tell you, whoever you are, that every time I've reached out to another Christian about this, it has gone so much better than I was scared of it being. again, I create all these situations that I'm going to get drugged through the public square and I'm going to have to do all this stuff. And like, it's just been a blessing. It hasn't been easy. They've been hard conversations. But the people that I've talked to about this have been people who have helped me and have said, I'm so glad that you told me. I'm so glad that you reached out. Let's get you some help. Let's talk about this some more. But you have to be willing to take that first step. And Satan, fear is one of his main tools in this. Is he wants to keep us scared. He wants to keep us making those excuses. And we've got to overcome that to reach out that first time. The first time is the hardest. I still remember where I was in that junior year of high school. The Christmas lights on my drum set and being on the phone and telling a friend of mine from camp and saying, this is what I've been doing. And I was just like, what is going to happen? And they said, yeah, me too. And we were able to help each other a little bit. We didn't really know how to help each other at the time. We didn't have a lot of resources that we knew about. But the burden that is lifted when you just tell another soul about this is tremendous. And I just can't tell you, it's so worth it to tell somebody. So please, please, even if you're scared about what's going to happen, it is so worth it. And it feels so much better just for another person to know what you're going through. So please, please do that. Is that all the questions we've got? Okay. Thank you guys so much for your attention, for your questions. These are great questions, and for your willingness to help. And again, like Josh said earlier, if I can be helpful to you, I can't help every single person in this room, but I want to. And so please, if you can't tell anybody else, but you feel comfortable telling me, I'd be happy to talk with you about that and to get you connected with somebody local, since there's no Pennsylvanians, local Pennsylvanians here, and to help you find somebody who can help you with that. And again, there's so much more help available than you realize if you've never talked with somebody. This is an epidemic problem in our culture, and we need to not let that make us think that it's normal, but make us realize that, hey, I am not alone. That's one of the biggest lies that Satan wants you to think is, I'm alone in this. I can't tell anybody. But if you will reach out and get help, then by God's grace, there can be healing.